The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you believe Christians should just preach the gospel and stay the heck out of politics. Well, my friend, only part of the gospel is about forgiveness from sins we commit. The other side of the gospel message is deliverance from sin committed against us. It's a complete deliverance from sin across the board, be it the sin of a demon or the sin of a dysfunctional family, or yes, even the sin of an evil government. That is part of the gospel speaking against evil. As a Christian, I watch the developments taking place in the government I live under. And if anyone is waiting for me to apologize for that, they'll have a very long wait. So, while we're on the subject, President Obama made history last week as the fastest lawmaker in the West. The rootinest, tootinest lawmaker in the West. The trick is to ignore our Constitution's rules on lawmaking. As CNN News put it, in an election year policy change, the Obama administration said it will stop deporting young illegal immigrants who entered the United States as children if they meet certain requirements. In a Rose Garden address Friday afternoon, President Barack Obama said the changes caused by his executive order will make immigration policy more fair, more efficient, and more just. This is not amnesty. This is not immunity. This is not a path to citizenship. It's not a permanent fix, Obama said, to take on conservative criticism of the step. This is a temporary stopgap measure. Thank God! Whew. I'm so glad Obama explained that this wasn't amnesty. People caught living in the country illegally will not be prosecuted if they fall within a certain range of ages. But no, that's not amnesty. That's not amnesty at all. How do we know it's not amnesty? Obama says so. That's how. This is about as reassuring as the time he said he was not a believer in big government. It wasn't enough to learn that Obama, the candidate, had kicked off his political career in the living room of a self-confessed, unashamed terrorist. And it wasn't enough that he sat under the racist teachings of a raving race baiter for 20 years. Neither did it matter when he came within half a breath of identifying himself as a socialist by freely sharing his plans to spread the wealth around. The man still got elected. After his election, dedicated groupies remained faithful when Obama appointed a proud communist as one of his czars. They continued following the Pied Piper, who sought talks with Iranian President Akhmat, Holocaust denier, all the while declaring the Jewish city of Jerusalem as occupied territory that should be split with the Palestinian people, whose charter calls for the destruction of Israel. The man knows nothing about the Middle East, yet he keeps opening up his mouth.
When Bob Siegel says President Obama doesn't understand the Middle East, he doesn't mean to imply that he knows absolutely nothing about the Middle East.
Thank you, Dan. We always appreciate the special assistance of Disclaimer Dan.
Actually, President Obama is aware that there is a whole side of the world called the East, and he does know that the Middle East is in the middle of it.
Dedicated followers continue to defend him in the wake of an attorney general who has made a mockery of our Justice Department. a series of national security leaks whose only value seems to be that of making our weakling president look like Rambo, and affordable health care for all that has driven up the premiums of those who already have health insurance and frightened small businesses into not hiring people in order to avoid a legal obligation to provide coverage for all employees. No, that collection of irresponsible governing decisions was not enough. Now, President Obama decides to update his resume by taking the law into his own hands. Well-intentioned people will debate the constitutionality of this decision, but it should be noted that the biggest constitutional critic of Obama 2012 is Obama 2011.
With respect to the notion that I can just suspend deportations through executive order, that's just not the case, because there are laws on the books that Congress has passed. And I know that everybody here at Bell is studying hard, so you know that we've got three branches of government. Congress passes the law. The executive branch's job is to enforce and implement those laws. And then the judiciary has to interpret the laws. There are enough laws on the books by Congress that are very clear in terms of how we have to enforce our immigration system, that for me to simply, through executive order, ignore those congressional mandates would not conform with my appropriate role as president.
Evidently, Obama's ever-evolving standards are not limited to his view of same-sex marriage. The man has learned and grown on many issues. In that vein, evolved Obama 6.0 decides that he can change the laws unilaterally. That's not entirely a dictatorship. Obama and Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano have invited Congress to go along with them by passing the DREAM Act. Yeah, just go along. Step up to the plate. Of course, Napolitano already defended Obama by saying these new immigration standards were well within the framework of existing laws. So exactly why the DREAM Act needs to be passed now is anybody's guess. Well, go ahead, Congress. Throw down that rubber stamp. That would be a much better course than impeaching a president who ignores our Constitution by maneuvering around the legislative branch and ruling by fiat. But be warned, Congress, any resistance on your part will be viewed as, are you ready? Partisanship, maybe even racism. Maybe you should stop him anyway before he decides to temporarily suspend the 2012 election due to some manufactured national crisis acting well within the framework of existing laws. Or maybe he'll just find a judge who can declare re-elections unconstitutional. Does that sound far-fetched? Does that sound outrageous? Yes, of course it does, but given this man's track record, the day is fast approaching where nothing he does will surprise us.
I've been thinking about our fortune, and I've decided that we're really not to blame for the love that's deep inside us now, still the same. And the sound we make together is the music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down.
We'll be right back. Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Journalist Edward Klein's recently highlighted interview with the Reverend Jeremiah Wright continues to spawn debate, but a much more revealing exchange took place, and we need a trip down memory lane for this. It took place in 2008 between Fox News' Bill O'Reilly and Barack Obama. Unfortunately, most people missed the revolution. The interview never became a national discussion. It should have. Klein deserves to be commended for bringing the Obama-Wright connection back to the public spotlight. It's certainly chilling to hear his recording of Reverend Wright claiming Obama's 2008 campaign team tried to bribe him into silence. Evidently, his disturbing sermons made Wright's association with Obama a political liability. Still, the teeth in Klein's interview are only so sharp. Obama apologists continue to insist that the president should not be held accountable for the controversial words of his 20-year pastor mentor, especially when Obama claims he never personally witnessed the more inflammatory speeches while sitting in church. But suppose it could be shown that Obama is less than truthful on this. A case could have been made in 2008 when mainstream media paid the story only a microscopic amount of attention. Now, certainly Fox News dug its heels in more than the other networks, but whereas credit can be given for better effort, even Fox was outfoxed when their most popular primetime news analysis program, The O'Reilly Factor, featured candidate Barack Obama as a guest. Now look, Bill O'Reilly is a bright guy and a fair interrogator. Still, the smartest of people sometimes miss things, and this particular slip-up is too important to bury. When O'Reilly asked Obama if he had ever witnessed Reverend Wright making racist remarks during the 20 years of attending Trinity United, Obama put great thought and care into his response. Let me read from that transcript. O'Reilly, did he say white people were bad? Obama, no. O'Reilly, never. Obama, what he said was racism was bad. And O'Reilly, but not white people are bad. Obama, there was no doubt that what he said was racism was bad. The relationship was ruptured. I'm not a member of the church. Okay, the answer was extremely crafty and slippery on Obama's part. Nobody will ever contest the guy's credentials as a skilled communicator, but this may have been the biggest lie he ever told. Carefully embedded in protective words that seem technically true on the surface until they are more closely examined from the inside out. The conventional logic of some leftist educators, civil rights leaders, etc., is that black people can never be racist, only white people, because white people have all the power. It's a definition of racism that they simply made up, but that is the definition. They claim that all white people are to some extent racist, and those who deny it are especially racist. Folks, let me make the obvious obvious. If only white people can be racist, and if all white people are racist, then a pastor who says that racists are bad is saying that all white people are bad. About a year before that interview, this was put out by WorldNet Daily, just to show you that this was a common teaching. A mandatory University of Delaware program requires residence hall students to acknowledge that all whites are racists and offers them treatment for any incorrect attitudes regarding class, gender, religion, culture, or sexuality they might hold upon entering school. That was from World Net Day. Now, of course, merely existing in a politically correct age does not automatically associate right with these cutting-edge opinions. The man should be allowed to speak for himself. Sean Hannity, another Fox talk show host, let him do just that. In an interview back then that Obama's people would not possibly have missed, could not possibly have missed, Hannity asked Wright about the website of his church, Trinity United, specifically statements on the website about commitment to the black community. Wright responded by connecting his church's black value system with liberation theology. Some of his words from back then to Sean Hannity. Black liberation theology started with Jim Cohn in 1968. Do you know liberation theology? How many books of Cohn have you read? All right, that's a very fair question. Fair question indeed. In fact, every American should understand the teachings of Dr. James H. Cohn, professor of systematic theology, Union Theological Seminary in New York City. At its core, liberation theology reinterprets certain passages of Scripture, emphasizing a God who is on the side of the oppressed. This is from Cohn's book, Black Theology and Black Power. It says, therefore, whoever fights for the poor fights for God. Whoever risks his life for the helpless and unwanted risks his life for God. God is active now in the lives of those men who feel an absolute identification with all who suffer because there is no injustice. And I know that probably didn't sound too bad, did it? That may sound reasonable. In fact, there is a kernel of truth in liberation theology. Only a kernel, but yeah, a kernel of truth. In fact, I mentioned at the top of the program today that God does want to deliver us not only from our own sin, but the effects of other people's sin on our lives. However, when the conflict is described in purely racial terms, the teaching is distorted into something hideous. That book goes on and says, all white people are responsible for white oppression. Theologically, Malcolm X was not far wrong when he called the white man the devil. The white structure of this American society personified in every racist must be at least part of what the New Testament meant by the demonic forces. Now, that's not that white people are beyond hope. Cohn is willing to show them a path of salvation that includes understanding the superiority of black people. Here's Cohn's words again. For white people, God's reconciliation in Jesus Christ means that God has made black people a beautiful people, and if they are going to be in relationship with God, they must enter by means of their black brothers, who are a manifestation of God's presence on earth. Ironically, folks, a true examination of the Bible, not Cohn's examination, but a true example, might have been a more productive discussion. The Bible does not condemn white people, but rather the Bible condemns all people. Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Perhaps if human beings admitted that sin is a joint heritage and that sin knows no racial bounds, the forgiveness part of the Bible would also kick in and healing could take place throughout our country, torn apart by race baiters. Those who don't believe in Christianity need not feel left out. After all, the Bible is not the only book. There are many classic writings that accurately appraise human nature. Here's one from William Shakespeare. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves, that we are underlings. If all human beings are morally warped, this includes the President of the United States. Many would be all too happy to accept the fact that he's just a man and forgive his mistakes, should he ever admit to actually making one. He could start by confessing that his pastor of 20 years really did teach that white people are bad, and therefore his answer to Bill O'Reilly, while political and clever, was also false. Obama's response was probably based upon foresight and precaution. After all, he has no guarantee that future discovery might not challenge his story. Should a video of Obama witnessing one of Wright's racist sermons ever surface, he has supposedly given himself the perfect immunity. He can say that he did admit to a knowledge of Wright's view of white people, albeit indirectly. Be that as it may, a lie of omission is still a lie. No, we cannot expect our presidents to be perfect, but we do expect them not to be liars. Well, I would like to invite the San Diego audience, or anybody that lives close by, or anybody that hears this program anywhere and wants to drive to San Diego, to a one-man drama. I do these from time to time. I've done them around the country. And next week at Skyline Church, 11 o'clock in the morning, I am performing a play that I wrote called Equal Before All Kings. It's kind of a cross between a dramatic reading and a performance where I play many different characters by changing my voice. It's based upon the book of Philemon, and the story involves Onesimus, a runaway slave who finds sanctuary with Paul at a time when Paul lives in Rome under house arrest, awaiting trial before the most vicious ruler of all, Emperor Nero. Onesimus' master, Philemon, a recent convert to Christianity, has informed Paul that despite his new religious convictions, he expects Onesimus returned immediately. Paul's landmark solution to the question of slavery is portrayed as a portrait of a man far ahead of his time. One of the big beefs about Christianity today taught by the universities found on atheist websites is that the New Testament condoned slavery. The New Testament did not condone slavery. And this play, although it's a mixture of fiction and fact, is based upon fact. Next week, July 1st, 11 o'clock a.m. to 1:30 p.m., it's a full-length two-hour play. There will be a free lunch served during intermission. It's at Skyline Church in Rancho San Diego. If you just go to my website, you can get all the information you want. So just think of the play, Equal Before All Kings, right on my front page. It says one-man drama under Events with Bob. Equal Before All Kings. I hope I get a chance to meet some of you there. Meanwhile, for today, if you'd like to weigh in on any of this, of course, you're always welcome to give us a call, 888-344-1170. Many people contacting us over the internet these days, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel, SIEGEL.net. And of course, people are following us on Facebook and Twitter, because anybody who's anybody is being followed on Facebook and Twitter. I try to keep up. I'm already hearing people going, Facebook, that's behind the times. You mean you're not on Google Plus or whatever it is? Probably it's gone beyond Google Plus. I can't keep up, but I try. Meanwhile, here are some Facebook comments commenting on my show from 2 weeks ago about the facts associated with the Bible. Two Christians disagree that I need to make much effort showing facts. Diane says, faith first, then facts. Both are a blessing. Robert says, the Holy Bible mentions faith more times than I can count as the greatest blessing in all things. Facts can be manipulated to fit your point. We'll be right back. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm reading some comments here. Robert and Diane are telling me that if we have faith in the Bible, we don't need facts. Now, I know my brother and sister in Christ mean well. I actually disagree with you, Robert and Diane. Faith is defined in the Bible as obedience. The apostles described the resurrection as a fact and said we could know we belong to God by his Spirit living in us. We could know it, not merely believe it. Now, discussing my comments from today about Obama passing a law by fiat, Diane, the same Diane, who commented about the Bible, also comments on this. She says, Barack Hussein Obama, crafty in his song and dance, actor as well. In regards to a dictator, President Obama is not acting real deal, eh? Annette says, it is his dream. Susan says, yes, he's acting like a dictator. There's no doubt about it, so let's please get this OSB out of the White House in November. Maureen says, is there any proof that Obama taught constitutional law? I find it hard to believe. Oh, he knows the Constitution, Maureen. He knows the Constitution. He just doesn't like it. That's all. It gets in the way of his plans. He's so arrogant, he thinks he needs to take the rest of us by the hand and simply make us do the right thing. He, of course, is going to decide what the right thing is. George says, the man is acting against the American people. Yay, bring him in, but keep them in check. Illegals, finally we are home free. Barry got my base back and have votes coming. Who cares? Who cares what will join the legal illegals coming in? Republican politicians, I don't know. What do you think? Get a grip, reps. How about getting after this guy's acting on his own? Unilateral used to mean action overseas against a foe, not this homeland stuff against us. Well, he said that in an interesting way. George did. This is Russ now. He says, an organization of 17,000 Border Patrol agents has now called for Eric Holder's resignation. The Obama image is starting to crumble, and those who are charged with enforcing the law are openly speaking about the emperor's sad lack of clothing. Mr. Obama is definitely not the law. His attorney, General Holder, is not the law, and those who are the law know it. Yes, Mr. Obama is acting like a dictator. He and his toadies are not fit to lead and must be relieved of command and authority. Grouchy says, this is the scariest president we have ever had, and it is eerily similar to Chavez. What does this man know that I don't? I have long said that there are 50 governors standing between us and the rule of a despot. I first heard of the possibility of suspended elections from my son, except he was talking about President Bush. I don't know if it can be done. I suspect not. Obama is a farce. He learns enough law to know how to circumvent it. This president knows very little law, and he is like a chameleon. He learns new laws daily. Yoshi says, this president not only chooses to ignore our Constitution, but blatantly uses Latinos to inspire more division and outrage over the unconstitutionality of his actions. The Latinos are told this is temporary and it will go away if they don't vote for Obama. More Chicago-style corruption. Jason says, shame on Democrats. You don't deserve the freedom that my grandparents gave you. They fought and lost limbs and brothers and friends in Germany. It had a dictator that printed so much money. If you were German, you had to get paid before you went to work because the money would lose its value by the end of the day, and you couldn't get a loaf of bread. You fools, you have no shame. Spit on God and the Bible, but have the army march in a gay pride parade. You disgust me and my family. I hope your women don't produce and life be full of misery. You don't deserve what they did on Omaha Beach. I hope you Dems and Obama rot in hell. Okay, well, that's more severe than I would be. I would rather see these people repent, Jason, but I do agree with you on one thing. They at least need to be voted out of office. This guy calls himself G. Patton. It's always interesting to see internet nicknames. He says, this cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled Marxist was enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for himself the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted him to unjust dominion. Now, regarding my online column version of the same story, JX says, nice title and image. That's called propaganda, not reporting. The image that's used is, I'm quoting from a speech that Obama gave when he said he was going to just change the law and grant amnesty, even though he tried to tell us it wasn't amnesty, shows him waving his finger at a reporter who interrupted it. That image is taken from the speech he gave. So what image should we have used? And by the way, JX, this is not a news report. It's called an editorial column. Just what part of that do you not understand? But the editorial did quote from a news report where Obama himself admitted in 2011 that he does not have the legal right to do this. I noticed you didn't even bother to mention that part of my article. Gee, JX, some might call that propaganda. Luke says, for all those claiming that Obama's executive order is unconstitutional, please note why it is perfectly legal. One, it is a temporary measure that does not change the legal status of residency of the persons concerned. It also does not offer a path to citizenship or amnesty. Yes, it does, but I'll continue. Two, presidents do have the right to issue executive orders regarding the legal status and residency of persons living within the United States who are not U.S. citizens. There is legal precedence for this, and a Republican president did this on a massive scale in 1863. Lincoln's executive order is better known as the Emancipation Proclamation, which granted legal status and residency to slaves in the United States and territories. Three, Today's order is much less sweeping. It is a prioritization of the enforcement of existing laws, since it is not possible for the government to prosecute all persons who lack immigration papers. It is a basic right and duty of the executive branch to execute laws in the most reasonable and responsible manner, and is the president's objective in this order. Okay, let me respond to this. First of all, Luke, if Obama has the legal right, then why do we have this same Obama on record saying he does not have the legal right? As for Lincoln, nice try. The Civil War contained a period of martial law, but let me get even more detailed. The Emancipation Proclamation is not all it was cracked up to be. It was not needed in most Union states because blacks were already free. Lincoln only freed slaves in Confederate states where the emancipation was worthless because they were living under the Confederacy, which wasn't going to put them in power. Nothing was going to happen until the Civil War was over. Now, a lot of people don't realize this. There were a few slave states that did not leave the Union, and these slave states were not emancipated. In other words, the Emancipation Proclamation only applied to states that couldn't apply it, states in the North that could apply it, Missouri, Kentucky, Maryland, Delaware, Louisiana. Those slaves were not emancipated. It was a tactic designed to inspire slaves in the South to revolt. Now, Lincoln was truly against slavery. And after the war, of course, all slaves were set free. But to do that legally, what did we do? We amended our Constitution. So perhaps you shouldn't be lecturing us with the Emancipation Proclamation as if it were some kind of holy precedent. It wasn't. And Luke, executive orders are not allowed to create law. Laws created by the legislative branch. Then regarding what I said about Obama on the O'Reilly factor, Russ says O'Reilly did a terrible job of vetting Obama in the run-up to the 06 election. Sometimes Bill is so open-minded that his brain falls out. I'll continue to read the rest of Russ's comment and read more of your comments when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. Welcome back to our program. Was in the middle of a comment from Russ responding to what I said about when Obama was being kind of slippery on the O'Reilly factor. He said, sometimes Bill is so open-minded that his brain falls out. He was trying to appear to be fair. Obama is a liar, plain and simple. He looked right at Bill, right into the camera, and lied to the American people. He is the most skilled, blatant, pathological liar I've ever seen. Bill Clinton pales by comparison. O'Reilly swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. Sean Hannity, on the other hand, did a perfect job of telling us what would happen. He exposed everything in 06. So did Glenn Beck. So did Rush Limbaugh. Okay, now regarding the online version of my findings about Obama and O'Reilly, you're going to love this next one. This is my favorite of all the emails today. Doug says, any article that cites WorldNet as a source is automatically discredited, in my view. Well, of course, he's discrediting WorldNet because they're a conservative source, of course. Doug seems to have zero problem with liberal news bias. And that story that I quoted in WorldNet about a college in Delaware teaching that all white people are racist can be found in many places anyway. WorldNet is nearly the one I quoted. But it's the rest of Doug's comment that I particularly want to highlight. He says of me, give this guy some tinfoil for his Klan hat and send him packing. I see. I get it, Doug. I challenge the conventional wisdom that all white people are racist and that makes me a Klansman. People, nobody could come to that kind of conclusion on their own. It's simply something they have to be taught. I don't know what you're paying to send your kids to college these days, but you got to believe me, it's too much. Doug, every word in my article was true, and you did nothing to refute a word I said. That's because you can't, Doug. And you know you can't. As for calling me a Klan member, before I converted to Christianity, I was brought up in a Jewish people. My own people, the Jews, were murdered by the Klan, so I really appreciate that comment. But go ahead, Doug, and quote exactly what I said that was racist. You just go ahead and quote it, you self-righteous, sanctimonious, arrogant, ignorant, loudmouth. Now, I know some of you are surprised to hear a Christian like myself respond in such a feisty manner. You don't expect Christians to talk that way. I guess I should explain. All I really meant to say was that Doug is a self-righteous, sanctimonious, arrogant, ignorant, loudmouth. Now, Nick says, this subject is too important to let it slide a second time. I understand if Romney decides not to touch this issue. At the same time, I am very happy that a few people like Mr. Siegel are keeping the subject alive. Well, thank you for the encouragement, Nick. It is good to find a kindred spirit who agrees that this stuff should not be shoved under the rug. Our next comment is from Richard Ryder, chairman of the San Diego Taxpayers Association. He defends me also, but he does it in kind of a humorous, sarcastic way. Bob, you naive simpleton, who told you it's okay for you to criticize the first black president of the United States? How racist of you. Reread the media rules of engagement in this matter. It's clearly spelled out. Obama gets a pass, largely because he is black, and you are presumably not. To violate this limitation just confirms your Klan membership. Then Spin Zone says, Doug, the guy that called me the Klan, Doug not only proves the point, he shows himself as a racist, one who gauges legitimate public policy debates from the standpoint of race instead of the merits of the argument, then automatically calls anyone who disagrees with him a racist, a kind of leftist Klansman when you think about it. Well, Spin Zone, yes, he does show himself to be a racist. If he believes all white people are racist or believes any group uniformly behaves a certain way, that's the definition of racism. As I said at the top of my show, part of the gospel is also speaking out against evil, and that's why people like this should be called on what they do. Jesus certainly exposed evil. That's why they crucified him. I challenge my fellow Christians and fellow conservatives, stop rolling over and playing dead for the politically correct. Stand up to them before your freedoms are gone with the winds of war and peace. Wouldn't that be a nice movie title? Gone with the Winds of War and Peace. Could be the ultimate in sequels, the super sequel. Well, last week, I addressed some questions sent to me by email from an atheist named Tom. Tom seems to be a nice guy, and I appreciate his letters. Tom writes me back today with another fairly long letter, so let me chop it up so that I may answer him bit by bit. He did hear my show over the internet. He says, thanks, I only just listened to it because I was waiting for it to come up in the archive. I checked Monday and Tuesday, and there were days. Yeah, usually the show that I record and broadcast on Sunday is posted by Friday. We used to put it up a little sooner. Lately, it hasn't been going up till about Friday. So it will go up. Be patient. But anyway, he did finally listen to it. He says, I would like to respond a bit to what you said. First of all, you used the complexity of the universe and life on it as evidence, and I don't want to get that word mingled up with proof, which I know is a different thing altogether. Evolution explains perfectly how life has evolved and how humans are as complex as they are today. I can't get into the whole debate about evolution because for me, I will be writing for a fortnight in two. I'm sure you know a bit about evolution. Yes, the universe is a complex thing, but just because it is complex does not suggest that it needed someone to create it. It is only complex because humans see it as complex. Our brains see it as complex. Okay, Tom, you just contradicted yourself, my friend. First, you admitted that the universe was complex. Then you said it isn't complex. Our brains only think so. Now, Tom, do you really wish to stand by a statement like that? Come on. You sound like a bright guy. I'll bet if you were talking about, I bet if you were not talking about God and somebody merely asked you if a molecule was complex, you'd say yes. If they asked you if a solar system was complex or if the human body is complex, you'd say yes. I don't think you'd say it only appears that way because of your brain. And since admitting that it is complex was one of your two answers anyway, let's just go with that one. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt and accept your more rational answer. Of course, life in the universe is complex. It shows design. You can't have a design without a designer. Our very DNA is like a computer program predetermining what we will be like. Now, I asked you last week if a computer could come about by randomness, and you did not answer that question. But again, the human brain and body is far more complex than a computer, to make the understatement of the century. As for evolution, it explains nothing about the complexity of life. Evolution is a process. And I have talked to many atheists, some on this program, who refer to evolution as a complex process. They don't view it as some kind of accident. Some of them get very insulted when I call it an accident. They call it a complex process which moves according to a plan. What plan? Who planned it? Also, there are theistic evolutionists. There are people who believe in God and evolution at the same time. They would say that for things to be evolving from a lower form of life to a higher form is quite an amazing process. Evolution does not seek to tell us how that happens. It merely reports that it did happen, allegedly. Charles Darwin himself believed in God and never wrote Origins of Species to disprove God. Evolution is unable to explain the origin of sentience and human personality. Last week, Tom, you said we should not automatically use God to fill gaps when there's a mystery. I agree. But neither should we automatically use evolution to fill gaps. Incidentally, macroevolution has not been proven. Nothing in science is proven unless it's repeatable and observable. We'll be right back.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
Show. Last week, I responded to a letter from Tom. Tom has heard the show, and he's writing me back. And he's saying that the complexity of the universe can be solved, answered, not by God, but by evolution. I pointed out that there are many theistic evolutionists because they've observed that evolution doesn't really answer questions such as where sentience and human personality came from. evolution is a process that seems to work according to a plan, but how that process came about, who programmed it, that's a big question. Of course, the minute we say who, we're talking about some personality anyway. And then I mentioned right before we went to the break that macroevolution has not been proven anyway. Nothing in science is proved unless it's repeatable and observable. Now, microevolution, changes within species, have been proved. But macro, changes between species, has not been observed and therefore remains a theory. And it's a theory which should be supported only if there were billions upon billions of fossils showing all kinds of missing links. There are none. Oh, there's a few alleged, a very few, a handful of alleged fossils, but even these are challenged by scientists, and some of those scientists are fellow evolutionists, and they still challenge them because they're so spotty. Tom continues. And just to point out another thing, if God does exist, why did he create so many other galaxies, which we'll never be able to get to? That puzzles me. Tom, haven't you ever watched Star Trek? Of course we can get to those other galaxies. No, look, we might someday. Look at the breakthroughs in technology. Thousands of years from now, who knows where human beings will populate. So how do you know we'll never get to them, Tom? But I admit at the moment, yeah, that's a fair question. That's a mystery. But you said yourself we should not automatically believe in God to explain a mystery. Well, Tom, let's not automatically refuse to believe in God just because you can't explain a mystery. It works both ways. Tom continues, I honestly think that argument about the universe being complex and how it couldn't just be random is dumb. Just because it is complex, why does that mean it has to take an intellectual personality to create it? Because, Tom, there's no other way to explain the complexity. That's how. That's not dumb. That's something you're refusing to ponder. Design does not come as a result of accident or randomness or chaos. And as I said last week, personality must come from personality. You can't get the personal from the impersonal. To say otherwise is to stand logic on its head. Tom continues. You talk about the Bible and talk about places in the Bible that exist in real life. What on earth does that prove? How convenient that the person writing the Bible, the many authors, use real places to set those stories in. Actually, Tom, the many authors of the Bible show that we have multiple witnesses, that the Bible's a collection of different historical documents, and it's nice that we have more than one historian. With a book like the Quran, for example, we're putting all our credence in one author who recited it, never even wrote it down anyway, a Muhammad. But we have over 40 different authors for the Bible. Historically, Tom, that's very good news. And Tom, I think you were missing my point last week. I never said that the mere mentioning of some ancient city was evidence for the Bible's accuracy. But the two places I did mention confirmed miraculous stories. See, yeah, I talked about Jericho, but they not only found the walls of Jericho, they found that the walls of Jericho fell in an unusual way. They not only found where the Israelites crossed the sea, they found an Egyptian chariot spokeswheel at the bottom of the ocean that dates to the kinds of spokeswheels from the time of Ramses II, Pharaoh, when Moses was alive. How did that get there on the bottom of the ocean floor? Did the Egyptians have surfboards shaped like chariots? Incidentally, Tom, I actually said very little about the Bible last week. Instead, when I read your question, I encourage you to download two previous shows because I had recently discussed for 2 weeks in a row, two-part series, the Bible on this radio program in great detail. I'm guessing you haven't done that yet. I'm guessing you haven't yet downloaded, and that's fine. That's fine. You just do it as you have time. But I can see you haven't done it yet because if you had, there's a couple of statements you're making that probably you would not have made. Included in those lectures is some stuff about Bible prophecy coming true and a lot more detail about other historians. But Tom does continue to respond to the little bit of history I did mention last week. He says, also, you bring up Josephus and Tacitus. Yes, they have written about Jesus, but what they wrote was written after the death of Jesus, so must have been stories they heard from other people. I was told stories about how St. Patrick banished snakes from Ireland. I don't need to believe that. Tom, my friend, you just threw out all history. Not just the history of Jesus, you just threw out all history with the statement that if it's written after the fact, if it's written by people who didn't live in the same time, it doesn't count. Tom, all historians write after the fact. That's why it's called history. That's why they're called historians. Until some event made an imprint upon society, a historian would not take the time to notice. Now, these particular historians still lived very close to the time of Jesus. Josephus lived at the same time as Jesus' eyewitnesses, Tacitus not long after. These men were not Christians. They still reported miraculous claims associated with the life of Jesus, and Josephus found the case very compelling. There are also ancient writings not from historians, but from contemporaries of Jesus who made comments for different reasons. The Jewish Talmud, the Acts of Pilate, both authenticate the life, death, and miracles of Jesus. Pilate also goes on and authenticates the resurrection. Let's be honest, Tom. If these same ancient sources merely claim that Jesus started a revolution, you would accept them. You say you want to believe in the Bible, so let me ask you a question. What would constitute evidence for the accuracy of the Bible? If the corroboration of archaeology isn't enough, if other ancient sources from people who were not Christians is not enough, what will be enough? Will fulfilled prophecy be enough? Oh, I anxiously await your comment on the prophecy, but I have a hunch you're going to dismiss that too. I'm forced to wonder if you have made a decision to just automatically dismiss whatever's brought before you. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. Tom continues, finally, this whole thing about near-death experiences, I actually watched the video on YouTube about the book Heaven is for Real and about that little boy Coulter, and you say that the video says he described things that he couldn't have possibly known. At least this is what his father claims, right? Just say I got very sick tomorrow and was facing death like Coltrane, and then I woke up. How easy would it be for my father to say to me, hey, I'm going to tell the media that you described your granddad and that you've never seen him, that you have seen the afterlife and all these amazing claims, and then we can write a book about it and sell to all those gullible people and become rich? I mean, there's no reason to believe that this person is saying, well, I have a reason. I know several friends of Todd Beppo, and they vouch for his character. And there were many other people in Coltrane's life who heard him say things besides his father. Coltrane's description of Jesus also matched that of a little girl who had a similar near-death experience, even though Coltrane never knew the little girl, knew nothing about her. But when he was shown her painting of Jesus after looking at countless pictures, hers was the only one that he said looked like Jesus. And there were many other such testimonies. I pointed you to additional sources last week. Tom continues, you spent time talking to me, and whether or not you want to respond to this is your own choice. I really do appreciate you addressing my questions, but I can honestly say that much as I want to be convinced the Bible is true, I haven't in the slightest been convinced. Just want to say a lot of people in my family are Christian, and I have full respect for your beliefs, not just your right to believe, but the beliefs themselves, and I do think if more people acted like Jesus, the world would be a better place. I just don't want you to think I have a hatred of you or any other Christian, because I don't. Best regards, Tom. No, I don't sense any hatred, Tom, but I'll tell you, I stand by every piece of evidence I supplied. Most of it you didn't respond to. The few things you did respond to did not convince me. They did not really refute a word I said. But I want to be fair, so if you think they did, Tom, I'd like to invite you to call into our program. We can have a little informal debate over the air, and this is a sincere invitation. I would like to see you offer your rebuttal one piece of information at a time so that we can each respond to each other on the spot. You didn't respond to my argument from morality last week. You didn't respond to my argument from personality last week. You can say you weren't convinced, but when you don't respond to the actual arguments, you aren't explaining why you weren't convinced. You did respond to the argument about the complexity of the universe. You responded by saying it is not complex, and then also saying it is complex, but somehow that doesn't demonstrate anything. Why not? Because somehow evolution explains it? But you offered no real explanation about how evolution accomplishes this. And again, evolution is only a theory. Even so, it's a theory describing an alleged process. It offers zero information on the origin of thought and sentience. But I want to thank you for writing in, Tom. Maybe we'll talk again some other time.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.